Well, my folks are here, they got an apartment. It's an upstairs apartment in a house, and three houses. That's where the old matter is now. In fact, they tore those houses down when they built those things, I can remember. And they lived there all the time that dad was carrying them.
What year are we talking now?
We're talking the 1930s. And I am not positive. Well, I could figure out that I was born in 1950, and my sister was 3 years younger than I was, and she was born
1918,
and that was the year they were.
So they stayed in that one place?
No, they lived here in Kinsley.
Here in Kinsley, but not necessarily in that location.
I think in the same place.
Oh, okay.
I never heard them say. What was the next question?
Oh, I don't know. And that's where you were born, right?
Mm-hmm.
So was there a doctor that attended your mother?
Oh, yeah. Doctor, I can't tell you. I'd have to look it up. One was her then when I was born, but the one that was the doctor when my sister was born was Dr. Dittar. Dr. Dittar, mother had typhoid fever. Dittar was the doctor that was giving a physical exam for World War II. And she had typhoid fever and she didn't think she was going to do it. And that came up to her app take the physical. Dr. Dittar said, I think he needed to come on the surface. So
he would have been pretty old at World War II, though, wouldn't he?
World War One,
okay.
I'm glad you got that.
I'm going on.
And the same thing happened to me in World War II. I was farming. I was 1A. I had a letter in the mail on Monday, and I was 1A. And Vern and I started making plans of what we were going to do, how we were going to do. We were living on the Clackamas place at that time. And on Saturday of that week, I got another letter from the network, somewhere in agriculture department. Ready, wanted to go. Another one of those cases where I guess I fell out of my way.
Now you were going to tell me, because your wife Fern was, you said, born where I live. Who owned that property?
Fern's father and mother, Fern's grandfather, Chair. They came from Indiana too. And there was five girls and a boy in their family, and mother died, and Fern's mother was a baby. And the older sisters raised them. Dad kept them all out there on the farm. The oldest girl's name was May, and the second one was Homer. And then they had a boy named Ray, and Ray fell off the window. Seizures, and he died there in one of the seizures. It was just five girls at home. And when Dad mother got married too, they went to Greensburg, got on a train and went to Preston. Got married over there. They had one of the, I think Fern's dad had a friend over there. They went over third place and came back. But anyway, when Fern was born, but she went up to her older sister, May, and who's the doctor that I can't tell you. That's who she was born on the place.
Shaler.
We know all this stuff. It's in the place. And that's another thing down in our country where
and you
thought
the Zimmets were the homestead.
Yeah, down in our country, Ronald Miller owned some land that we lived on at one time when I went to school at Wimbledon. We called it the Domain land. It was homesteaded by on the main father, and he had pasture rights on putting all the land to green for him. I don't know how much land. I think it was 240 acres of that original, but I think a quarter was all like a homestead, and he probably bought another 18 acres. But he had the pasture rights and all that. And of course, his daughters, three of them, I think, were in houses. Worked out, keep grass, and
well, I don't feel so bad that my place is still called the Shaler place, because they lived on it for, what, 70 years or something?
Oh.
And you're still calling it by the original homesteader, so that tells you how long you have to live out here before you're part of the community.
I guess that's right. You know, when I quit farming, I was farming about 2,200 acres of land. One day, my dad and I got figured out, and on that 2,200 acres that I was farming, he could remember when there was 11 families. And I know some of them. In fact, I had destroyed the home sites of three of them, where the foundations for the building were. During the Dirty 30s, there was a lot of tree belts. Now this generation is taking out, maybe not the whole tree belt, but they're taking out the center of it where the irrigation system connects around. My dad came out several years before he died. We went on a little tour, and he said, there used to be a house that lived down here. Where did he live? And I said, well, Dad, we went by his place a little while ago. I said, everything's gone. They piled up. That particular group piled on trees that they dug up on top of the house and the barn, and just some cold winter fire, and I went to all of them and put in irrigation system. And he was lost in the woods at one time because, you know, there was a mail route that went down through there. He knew where it was. But it sure changed.
What were the hardest times that you went through? Was it the Dirty 30s? Can you describe that a little bit more?
Well, we went, that's going to sound good.
No, that's all right. Don't worry about it.
We went through the 7 years without raising a crop. We were living on the Taylor place. Dad was broke, and he told Mr. Taylor, he said, I can't go any longer when I'm broke. And he said, you can't quit. He said, you stay with me, we'll come out of it. Had the bulk agency for the home oil company here in Kinsley, and he furnished Dad with all the fuel and oil he needed, and gave him everything he raised, which was nothing. And we sold hogs for $3 a hundred. I had to haul them in a wagon to Greensburg.
$3 a hundred?
Hundred weight. And we milk cows.
That's right.
We gave Dad all he raised. We had we were milking cows, and there was a fellow by the name of White at Truesdale. He was one of the original citizens of that area. He gave up completely. He said he couldn't pay bill. He had a herd of Jersey milk cows. They were good cows. He said, just take them and forget my bill, I'll give them to you. So Mr. Taylor came out and he told us, he said, Guy White has quit and he's giving me his cows. If you want those cows to milk, you go get them and you can have them. Well, Dad said, I don't know how to get them, so I don't have any horses or anything. He said, I've got a saddle horse up north of Kinsley that a guy gave me, and he said, I'll give it to Earl if you want it. So we...
You were a cowboy for a little bit?
I was a cowboy for a lot of times because I built colts for the neighbors to ride. And when I started, just going back a little bit again, when I started school, Dad bought me a Shepherd pony, and I rode that pony all through grade school until my sister got in school, and then he made a little cart for it, and we drove a single sort of cart, and we both rode that cart. By the time,
what happened to the horse while you were in school? Did you have, was it just tied outside? Or?
Yeah, tied outside. The first, at Wendell, had a barn.
Had a barn.
The nursery tied it to a tree. And I was so proud of him. I was taking the air corn to eat it, and I forgot it one morning, so I went down to Will King Jr.'s and borrowed air corn, feeding the pony at noon. But anyway, I broke colts for the neighbors to ride. Out of it. I did break some for Mr. Taylor, and he was one that he wanted to go for Julia Westfall, who was a triple lady in North Kingsley. She rode that horse in the parades all for a long, long time.
Now, how did you break them? Just get on their back and ride them?
Yeah, of course. You didn't want them to broke somebody off, you know, so you had to be careful with that part of it. But anyway, this riding this pony to school, I told Mary for a
while. Well, how far away was the school?
A mile and a half at Wendell, or a mile and a half at Mary. And when I got older in the eighth grade, I was pretty smart for them. I was driving automobiles. And only 14 years old, but I was driving a Model T to school when it was cold. But anyway.
Well, that I would think that for you to be able to have a car to drive to school, did your family have two cars, or did you take?
One took the family car.
You took the family car. Well, you were pretty spoiled.
No, that's not saying spoiled. I was trustworthy.
Trustworthy. Okay. Because, you know, wasn't that unusual? Did all the kids get to drive?
Well,
I wouldn't think the kids would have gotten to drive.
I had wonderful parents. We had a loving family. I never thought any more about loving my mother, you know, than I would my wife. And that was the atmosphere I grew up in, and I tried to pass that on to my own children. And those things have changed so much to what they used to be, you know. Now over half the marriage is able to divorce. And I've got two grandsons. I don't know whether they're going to get married or not. And to worry. They're 31 and
will be in
October. They're 31 and 7, and they have a girlfriend, and they're not married. And the older one, those boys have been in bridal parties. I just can't believe how many they've been in, and pretty near all of them have ended in divorce. And the older one, I think he's afraid to get married before he's going to
be. I think that's going on. I think you're right.
He had a friend that was a law firm together, and he got married in a family that had an attorney there in Chickasha, Oklahoma, where they lived. The wedding cost over $40,000 6 months of the divorce.
Oh, my word.
2 years later, he married another girl, they got to go live.
Well, I'm curious, because you had this car, and I was calling you spoiled. What was Christmas like in your house?
Christmas?
When you were growing up.
Well, we decorated everything up.
Did you have a tree, or?
Oh, you bet. But went someplace where there was a cedar tree, you know, and cut one down. And that's a tradition that we really passed on. Our daughter was married and has divorced. She's never remarried. She has a home in Raleigh, North Carolina, where she was. And she has a Christmas tree every year in the world. She gets that Christmas tree, decorates it, and then she comes to Arizona for Christmas, and she goes back home, takes Christmas tree. We have to put up a Christmas tree in Arizona for Christmas. And we live in a, what they call a pot model, which is just a glorified trailer, 3 rooms. And we have that thing decorated. Streets in our park are numbered after the alphabet, and we live in old street. And about 15 years ago, T Street decorated up, and they challenge the park to meet them, they got a lot of people, I'll tell you that. We had people coming through that park by the for about 2 weeks' time. And at night, they'd open it up to you can come through and look at the way they were trailing through that building. But some of the older ones, competition, I'm afraid nothing's going to die down now. It's not as bad, but they still do a lot.
Did your early trees, were they, did you have electric lights or no lights or candles? Or?
No, we never did put candles on. And we had ornaments on them until we got electricity.
And then did you have gifts?
We had electricity. Dad had a coal and light plant. And he had electricity for some time before we did. And then when electricity went by where we were living on this Kaikendal thing, they knew they were going to sell it when this Kaikendal passed away, and they didn't want to spend the money to wire the buildings up. So they didn't take on electricity, but I got Dad's coal plant. And I ran a wire up in the basement and put the plug in.
Well, what is a Kohler plant?
Well, it's electric.
Generator?
And when you pull the switch, it's open motor. And you would operate up to 15 watts of light.
And it burned propane?
Our just hooked on to the propane tank with the stove and the refrigerator.
So when did you get electricity? What year was that
event? Well, when we got electricity in 1951.
51.
And I had gone over there and remodeled the barn and was selling grade A milk to the Fairmonts in Dodge City. And I put some more stuff in there. Line that was on it before that kept throwing the Rotomaster breaker out on the pole. We finally came out and found out what all the oil was doing, and so then we put in the regular transfer and then we put the top of it. But that was enough to get out. And it was probably like 10 to 12 years. I had enough to do the 6 o'clock in the morning. On the route to the Dodge City. That's another sideline the farmers have that's come and gone. The time I was milking cows, there was 3 dairies south of Kinsley. And the St. Peter and Paul area here north of Kinsley, there was a whole bunch of dairies. And we were all getting gypped. All the milk Fairmonts formed the Southwest Milk Producers Association and a big piece of price.
And you raised the feed for the milk cows?
And
how many cows did you have?
Most Iowa milk is 37.
And these were using milking machines or did you always have to?
Milking machines.
Now when your dad got the cows, was that still hand milking?
We milked them hand.
Yeah.
And I was told that I had to milk the cows. When he was working in the field, I had to milk the cows in the morning and night. Whether I got home at midnight or earlier from school, I had to milk those cows. And I milked them all myself. And
how many were there then?
Oh, I milked 5 and 9.
So how long would it take to milk 9 cows?
Oh, not too long. I was pretty good milker. I'd better milk than my dad was. Well, cause it started hungry. But anyway, I come home one evening about dark. And Dad was there, and he had milk in the cow. And I said, "I'm done. I'm done milk." If I was going to run a dairy, I'd run a dairy. If I was going to milk, if I was going to farm, I'd farm. And then years later, when I was milking the cow, he came out, and I had to shut the combine off and milk the cow. I'd go back out and run the combine at 10, 11 o'clock at night, and then I'd come in, go to bed, and get up at 5 o'clock, go milk the cows, down the milk course at 6. He was out there one evening, standing there in the barn while I was yucking, and he said, you know, I just think and believe if I'm going to farm, I'll farm, and I'm going to live and bury, I'd live and bury. And then he started to laugh, and he remembered what I told him.
Answered most of the questions on our little thing here. I don't know, either maybe when you were young married, and you know, what was the social life like?
Well, social life when I first married, we made it to South. And we had about four couples, all young married. Estes, and they lived down toward Greensburg. We all knew they didn't help us out. And Harold and Florence Sweeney. And we would get together and learn to play the piano. And Estes played the saxophone. And we had different places we'd go, they'd have some kind of a music machine, like Edison, you know, something like that. We did a lot of dancing. And
just in home?
Yeah, in home. And then, before we were married, you know, times were hard, there was skating rink. And in fact, the first time...
Roller skating?
Roller skating. First time I went to get a date in front of she had a date tonight, and couldn't do it. I got a card from her about a week later. She said that her class was having a skating party at Greensburg skating rink, and if I knew how to skate, I'd skate, and I'd let her know I'd be her partner. That was the first date I had to do that. And of course, the skating rink in Greensburg, I went to high school, and that was common place to go, you know. Skate all night for a quarter.
Did you rent the skates, or did you have your own?
Oh, you rent. You got the skates. You skate all night for a quarter. But now the entertainment course is pretty good.
What about movies? Are there movies out there?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Those kids are here at the movies. I'm not sure. They get stars and everything like that. You go to the show for 25 cents. I used to get to go to the show on Saturday afternoon when folks go to town to shop. I could go to the show for a dime, and they brought me to run a hamburger place over there where the beauty shop is now. You get a hamburger for a dime, and go to the show. And my dad bought me a 22 rifle for my 12th birthday. And rabbits were so thick at that time, and the county was paying a bounty on rabbit ears. You get a nickel for rabbit ears, you get a dime for a coal can for a goat. And I had this little Shetland pony that went in the cart, and I had a little haired dog called Rover that loved to ride in the cart. And he was running this little rascal we ever saw, and if I crippled a rabbit, he'd jump off the cart and run him down. I'd drive around over the fields with all those rabbits that just went up and sit down, and I got pretty good with the rabbit. And every Saturday when they'd come to town, I'd take the courthouse and sell them a rabbit ear. Once in a while, I'd have a cold crow, a very solid crow. And I'd put by my shells. I'd get three boxes of 22 rifle shells, a quart for 29 cents. The bottom over here is Miner's varieties. And then I'd have enough money to go to the show.
And
over
the rabbits, cottontails, or
jackrabbits? They didn't pay for cottontails. And they got so bad that during the Dirty 30s, they organized rabbit drives. In fact, we had the first rabbit drive out of the Taylor place out here. And it was the beginning of it, and they covered too much territory. More rabbits got away than we got in the pen. I think we got 900 in the pen. But I went on rabbit drives. The biggest one I was ever on was the pens was on, you know where the road ends at the coming south of Belfry, where you got to go on a parallel one way or the other. That's where the pins were. And of course, they've got known soldiers at that time, but I have no idea how many people were in that drive. And they ran around so many sections and drove in there. And they got, if I remember right, around 3,000 rabbits, and they got 5 coyotes.
And then you just, then you would shoot them while they were in the pen?
No, or no, that was the bad part of it. They let the kids in there with ball bats.
Oh.
And they loaded them in the trucks at the mink farm out of Garden City. Not delivered. And I don't know what they did. They put out some of the tankies for food or something. And, there was a fellow south of it.
But did they use the furs through
there? No, they skipped. They did. They the rabbit drive people did.
No,
there was a fellow by the name of, what was his name? They lived south of Crossville down there. Myers, my town. It was Bob Rabbits. And we had a snowstorm. And Warren Channing, he was his wife, his friend. And they lay up on the Channing Pass down here, about 2 miles before we were on the back road. And he called up and said, let's go rabbit hunting. I said, Bob was paying a dime for the back hunting. And he had a Model A Ford trunk on the back. I know you've seen him. The sides folded out and made a long trunk. We had 100 rabbits in that thing. And 2 hours' time, I went down there and sold them to him. And went back and got a whole bunch more to sell again. And then I got some money he could buy before. And he was skinning them and passing them down. Now, I don't know what he did with the meat. Livers, that's what he said. Garden City.
And what, were the livers a delicacy or?
No, they went to the mink farm out of Garden City.
Oh, to feed the mink?
Feed the mink. Why the livers, I don't know. I never did find out why.
Maybe it may produce a really good fur.
Something.
What's that? Well, I learned something from that today. Oh, I told us so many good stories. What was the best day of your life? I like that, Chris.
Best day of my life. Well, I've had a lot of goodness. To live to be 90 years old and be able to sit here and talk to you like I have.
And remember everything so well.
Yeah, and I have to watch myself because I see a fellow all stooped over and walking with clean chairs. That poor old devil. Here I am, maybe 10, 15 years older than he is. So I've had a lot of good days. I suppose the happiest day of my life is when I got married.
You didn't tell me about that. What was your wedding day like?
No, wedding day. You won't believe it. Where we lived over there in the Taylor place, Michaels has lived in the same section south of us. West Sides was married to one of the kings that I told about in the nursery. He married one of the kings. You know? Anybody would see a coyote, they'd call up and say, there's a coyote side place. Boy, they would go to get a coyote. Well, Clarence Michaels was my best man. He just had him and my sister was coming. They brought him. But anyway, he called up and said, bus was called, the coyote on the head priest. Are you ready? And I said, no, I only got one shotgun. And Henry Michaels go down through the field and run the coyote out. And wherever he went, I was after him. But he was going north, and when he crossed the road in front of us, I shot him. Knocked him down, but he didn't shoot. He was out in the field there, which was Henry Fine, Bill Brown's field. Shorty got out there, and he went home, he was back. Had been a terrifying pit. And I got a coyote there, so I got a little bit. So he had to put him up and run. And he darn near upset the thing. The eye goes, and I said after it's over, I was taking a bite of weed if I'd had the window rolled. But we finally got him. And then at 1 o'clock that afternoon, I was to get married. So we went over there, and we were married in terms of folks. Her folks had homesteaded some land in Colorado, and they still had it at that time, and they moved back to farm where we were in He was in the government.